Now it's great pleasure to announce our main speaker, Darren P. from Santa Barbara and all his following.
Hi everybody, my name is Darren, I'm an alcoholic. All my following, oh my God. Can you believe they all fit in my car? That's not good, though. I want to thank Kristen for asking me to come down here again. We've become friends over the years, and I really appreciate you, so thank you. And, oh my God, the 10-minute speaker. Everyone was being so nice to me before the meeting, and then some woman came up to me at the break, and I thought she was going to say it. She said, beat that. I thought, oh, holy shit. They screw you. So anyway, where is she? Where's fish sticks? She was so funny. You are brilliant. Oh my God. Fish sticks, that's going to stick, that one. I love Santa Barbara. I mean, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love everyone that came from Santa Barbara. You know, there has to be a vast amount of fun about this thing. And if it wasn't fun, trust me, I wouldn't be doing it. So, but if you're new, or you're not so new and you're still miserable or depressed or suicidal, you know, welcome. That's exactly what it was like for me until I got into action. Sitting in a meeting ain't just gonna cut it. Not always anyway. You know, not for the real alcoholic. So, you know, if you are new or you are miserable, I'm gonna piss you off because I'm one of those happy fucking people in Alcoholics Anonymous where. You know, I hate people generally speaking, right? By the time I get to AA, I especially hate happy people. Oh my God. Oh my God. You know, I'm so judgmental as well. You know, he's ugly as could be, and he's happy, and I don't understand it. And I want to kill myself. And, you know, there's a fat family in the park having fun with the. I'm like, you've got fat kids, do you know? You've got fat kids, they're chucking them around, having a good time, and I just want to kill myself. It's not fair. How's that fair? Right? I don't understand what's going on. Why am I dying from the inside out? So I'm glad there's laughter here. I'm glad you brought us laughter. I remember the first time I laughed out loud. I went, fuck you, what was that? What was that? It was me. Because I hadn't laughed for so long. I remember it distinctly going, oh my God, this is crazy. I thought life was over, didn't you? Life is over. If I can't go to the pub and try and be king shit and try and get laid at the end of the night being this funny little chap, what? It's over. I'm going to be boring, very boring or bored person. And AA for me was always depicted on the telly in England. Like, I don't know if you know this, but I'm from England. I am not having a stroke or something. Okay? I was born in England. But I've seen it on the telly, and it's so boring the way they do it. Like, I saw it on Hill Street Blues. All the youngsters will have to Google it. Hill Street Blues. If you had a drunk cop, they would send them to Alcoholics Anonymous. But then you'd see like 12 or 14 guys in a circle. They're all fat, they're all old, they're all bald, and they're all miserable. And one's 2 weeks sober, and they're all clapping. I'm like, oh my God. And everybody's telling me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. The doctor, my family. I'm like, what are you trying to do? Kill me quicker? I'm already suicidal. But I didn't understand that. I didn't know there was a program of action. I didn't know that those that are here and they're laughing and they're enjoying themselves have gotten into action and gone through the 12 steps and had a psychic change or a spiritual awakening. I thought the whole point to meetings was, I don't know if you're like me, but I'm so much trouble out there. I thought the best thing they can do is just shove me into a basement meeting or a church somewhere for an hour and everybody can relax. And then off we go, like creating havoc again. I thought that's all it pretty much was. And I've seen the sober dances, and there's ugly, the three people are at the sober dance, and I'm thinking if I score the girl with more than three teeth, I'll be killing it. I'll be killing it, right? I'll be back at the top of my game again. I didn't know AA was going to be full of good-looking people like you. I've just seen it what's on the telly. So welcome. I'm not here to impress you with my drinking story either, because I know I can't do that. You can't outdo anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? No. Can't outdo fish sticks. I can't do that. I got sober at 13 and I thought that would be like, oh my God, did you hear that? He got sober at 13. It's like, no, you boring bastard. 13, oh my God. You know, someone's just come off a 4-year relapse, met the love of their lives in AA, had twins, come back out, relapse, and they come back in the 14 years of age. You're like, oh my God, all right. So you can't outdo anybody. This, and we're drinking and using younger and younger. This one woman speaker, her whole story surrounds the fact that she was drunk in her mother's womb. I'm like, fucking hell. All right, you win. Why don't you just give all the talks all the time, and there you go, you win. So you can't outdo anybody in AA. Alcohol worked for me for a long time. Is there any other party animals out here tonight? Yeah, thank God for that. Now, I know some people were born miserable, remained miserable, were drunk and miserable, and then they came to A and they're miserable. That just sucks for you, right? I happen to have a good time. I've nothing against drinking as an institution. I've nothing, if anyone in here might have a drink tonight, that's fine. You know, have one for me. You know, there's nothing I can say will stop you from having a drink. You know, we have to be kind of done. And By the time I came into the rooms of AA, like I have to have a bit of vodka in me just to go and do something really weird, like interact with another human being, you know, something weird like that. So I have to have enough vodka in me just so I can pretend everything's good, so I'm feeling confident, so I can look you in the eye. And I was dying of this, of untreated alcoholism. I have the soul sickness. The black soul sickness that's killing me from the inside out. It wants to separate me from you and kill me. And so by the time I get to AA, I don't know what's going on. And this is not like what I've seen on the TV. And I go to a men's stag. There's 100 men in a circle. And everybody's having a good time. And they're chit-chatting. And then it's about to get down to business. And they're all sat down. And the meeting starts. So I pull me a bottle of vodka out and start drinking. Everyone's like, holy shit, look at him. He's drinking, I'm flat out drinking vodka. And I'm like, where the fuck's no one else drinking vodka? What's going on with that? I don't understand. Now, I stayed drunk in AA for a full year. A full year. For 3 months, I drank openly with my vodka bottle. In all the different means all over Santa Barbara. Then I realized what's going on. You cheeky monkeys are putting it in a water bottle. I'm just very slow. I'm slow. So finally I figure it out and I put the vodka in the water bottle and I come and I'm ready. Who's that vodka with the water bottle? There he is. As soon as someone starts drinking, I'd pull mine and I'd go, cheers. I have a little drink. You know, but I am circling the drain of life, and it is jails, institutions, and death is close. And you can't scare me with death at that point. It's like, bring it on. Kill me now. Right? Alcoholism doesn't have the dignity to take us quickly, though. It's gonna mess with some of us. Like, I don't die. I should be dead. Some of us should be dead. I wasn't one that's going to die. My fear is not dying an alcoholic death. My fear is living an alcoholic life. Right? And happy birthday, my mate Chris. And happy birthday, all the birthday people. My heart gets so full, I don't know what to do with it sometimes, you know. And it was a long time, years of my last drinking, I was suicidal on awakening. Absolutely suicidal on awakening. So when I was drinking through school and going to college, you know, I started at 13 and I was drinking in the park, drinking from my bottle of cider with my mates. We're having a good time. We're drinking on a Friday. And a Friday or a Saturday, and we're not supposed to, and sometimes we get in trouble, sometimes we get away with it. But I'm socially drinking from a fairly young age. And then we managed to get into the pubs and bars in England because the drinking age is 18, not 21, 18. But there's no ID system. Now that's weird, I know that sounds weird, but that's how it was. There's no ID system. You have to kind of look about 18. So hopefully you got a little thing going on here as a youngster. 14, 15, you're trying to grow your little tash. And I'm 14, my mates are 15, and after I downed a bottle of Old English cider and I'm king shit and feel like Superman, I announced to my mates, we're going to the pub. And we're going to the hardest men's pub in town as well. And I remember we got there, it's about 10 o'clock at night, I kicked the front door in, we waltzed up to the bar. I must be about this big. And I said to the barmaid, I'm like, yeah, I want a pint of Stella. Because I knew that was strong lager. I want a pint of Stella and the same for my mates. So she just looked me up and down and went, okay. Turned around and served us, Robbie. Yes! We couldn't believe she served us. And that was, now once you've been served, you're in. You are in. So the next week we went, the next week, and then a few weeks down, like some other new barmaid wouldn't serve me. I said, what are you talking about? She served me the other week. And she looked over to her mate and her mate went like that. And she said, okay, then you're in. Like old school or what? Like, yeah. So we just started drinking in the pubs from a very early age and we ruled that place. We had a good time. I remember it was my birthday, my 18th birthday. And there's 25 of us in there. We're all going nuts. We're all having a good time. And I go to the bathroom and I'm standing next to the landlord. And we're going to the bathroom and he looks at me, he's all, there's a lot of people, a lot of you's in here tonight, what's going on? He says, my birthday. I said, how old are you? I said, I'm 18. He's all, you little bastard, 18. You've been coming here for 5 years, man. I know, man. He's all, let's get you a drink. So I drank through school and you know, I'm not going to give you a big drunk a lot because I want to talk mostly about the spiritual illness, you know. I'm suffering from this illness. And I know we know it's the drink is a problem, the drugs are a problem, but... And this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going to talk mostly about alcoholism. You know, I did try cocaine once for 20 years. You know, that shit was awesome. I'll do anything that makes me drink more than my mates. You know, everyone thought I was an animal. Look, have you seen how much Darren can drink? I'm like, yeah, I could drink all under the table. But going through university, you know, everything was good. I love to party. I can drink a lot, and hangovers are not too bad. Everything's good. And I graduate. And I was going to become a teacher or something. I remember thinking that was so boring. Oh, my God. The main reason I went to university was to put off real life, really. Not to get a degree in this. I want to put off real life because I want to get a boring job. I'm a party animal. So I graduate and about to become this teacher. My brother saves the day. My brother's older than me. He's settled down. He's not a party animal. He has a kid and a wife. And he has this idea to start up a business. And I'm thinking, I thought that sounds brilliant. I'm great. And he knows what he's doing. And you know, I'm like a marketing guy. We call him a bullshitter in England, right? I'm the bullshitter. I'm the marketing guy. But he says, come back to Manchester and we'll start this business. And I go, okay, I'm in. And he's just a brilliant businessman. I couldn't have done it without him. But we start this business up and I'm the face and the front of the business because he's already a business owner. And it just it does very well. I won't bore you with the details, but the business starts off, and the joke is, you know, you're going to need some offices because I started it off in my bedroom back home with mum and dad, and we got some offices in downtown Manchester. I got a secretary, and then a younger, lovelier secretary, and things were going great. We're employing 50 plus people. We buy my brother's business outright, so he can come on board with me. And we're just doing really good, kind of, I had arrived kind of thing. Within like 18 months, we had outstanding invoices of almost $2 million. You know, everything is just going great. I've got, you know, Miss Manchester on my arm and I'm driving a sports car. You know, the bankers watch with amused skepticism. I'm whirling fat checks in and out of his account. But alcoholism is now starting to take its grip on me. And the only way I can describe it is I started to feel really weird. Really weird. Like, what's going on? Like, the confidence was starting to slip. I'm starting to feel a little bit jittery. And I don't know why. Now, when I go out at night, everything's cool, man. Cool, you know. Thank God for that. You know, that was a weird day. Thank God I can... You know, then during the day, I'm just so weirded out. I just didn't know what to do. And I remember I was in the bank... one morning, it was like 9:30 on a Monday morning, and I was dying, man. I was having a bad hangover, dying. But I had to go in this Monday because I'd taken the 14 previous Mondays off, right? So I drag my ass into work, and I go to the bank, and I'm supposed to give him these checks, and it's, you know, it's freezing outside, but I'm sweating, but I'm in my suit, so I think I look all right. Am I fooling everybody? But I think I'm having a panic attack. The walls are closing in and people talking about me and the line's not moving at all, man. Oh my God, what's going on? And I hated that feeling. Anyone remember that feeling? I can't stand that feeling, and I'm going to lose my mind. And if someone had just turned around and caught my eye and said, hey, what's wrong with you? I'd be like, fuck, I don't know. Do you know? I don't know. And I'd just leave. I would just have to leave because I can't be confronted like that. So I'm losing my mind, and it's really affecting my ability to do my job. I used to be the guy that would go in to see the CEO of a huge marketing concern, an insurance company, and speak to him and tell him, look, you're selling an inferior product to mine, and mine's cheaper, and here it is, let's do the deal. And we'd do the deal. I used to be good at that. Now I can't even get out of my car. I would park down an alleyway, and I'm supposed to go into this high rise, and I just can't get out of the car. You know, I can't stand it. And I'm so anxiety ridden. Like, has anyone in here ever suffered from a little bit of anxiety? It's the worst feeling in the world, right? So I wasn't doing my job, and I'm hanging on by a thread, and I've got that sense of impending doom all the time. I'm waking up with a sense of impending doom. It's like normal people couldn't do what we do. How do we do what we do? They couldn't even do it for a weekend. I was hanging on by a thread for years. For years, I wake up and I'm in trouble. How am I in trouble? I just woke up, but I'm in trouble. I know I'm in trouble. And I know everything's going to come crashing down. And so I knew this thing was coming, but I was still surprised by it. I went to the boardroom meeting. There was three directors and me. And I'm not paying attention as usual. And then I heard the word, so Darren, yeah, we're going to let you go. And I said, wait a minute, what? What? Yeah, we're going to let you go. I said, fuck it, no, you're not. What do you mean? I built this business up from my bedroom, you bastard. He said, well, here it is, and we don't know what's wrong with you. And I just got furious and threw the table over, and I flew over to give my brother a flying headbutt, right? I believe in clear communication. So the finance director tackles me, and it's just an awful scene, and I've been completely found out. You remember one of them times? Just completely found out. Busted. Like I was in bed naked and someone just went, hey, where do you go? There he is. There he is. And I'd be like, yeah, well, just found out, and nothing I could do. So they get rid of me, they give me a shitty check, and I walk home. It's a Thursday morning, and it's the most miserable, most longest day of my life. You know, should I kill myself? I don't know. I think I've been found out big time. All I care about is how I can spin the story to my circle of friends. That's all I give a shit about, as long as you still think I'm okay. And I spend all day at home, and I'm contemplating, what am I going to do? We've already arranged to go out that night, so I get to the bar good and early. I have a couple of stiff drinks, and the old fierce determination to win comes back. Right away, comes back. And here's Si, and here's Dave, and I say, hey, you hear what happened today? My brother, he's a dickhead, he's a wanker, my brother. Who needs those guys? I don't need them. I told them where to go. They went, yeah, did you, Dazzle? Yeah, I did. They bought it. That's all I cared about. They bought it. So we went out that night and got good and drunk, and everything's good, you know. And then I said, you know, and then I'm so confident. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I don't need any of those. I'm going to travel. I like to travel, mate. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to America and become president or something. Hey, you never know these days, do you? Right, Chris? You never know, man. So I come to America for a two-week holiday. 18 years ago. Still on holiday. Now, I know I'm drinking too much at this point myself. I know I've got a bit of a problem. But I think the problem is the girlfriend who we've just broken up, right? I think the problem is me wanker of a brother, right? I think the problem is England or Manchester. But what happened is somebody checked the problem onto a plane at Manchester International Airport and flew it all the way to LAX. And there I was. And I have a couple of cousins that lived in Santa Barbara. They're already well established. They've been there 20 plus years. One of them comes and picks me up. Introduce ourselves. We get in the car. We're driving up the 101. And he lights a big spliff up and hands it straight to me. And I'm thinking, I like California, man. I'm all right. you know, maybe I'm doing too much speed, maybe I'm drinking too much, I'm not going to do any of that, but I'm on holiday. I don't know what you do when you're on holiday, but I like to have a drink. So I have no responsibilities, and I stayed drunk for like 3 weeks, and my visa allows me to stay for 3 months, so I stayed drunk for 3 months. Yes, I'm jittery and nervous during the day, but I have no responsibilities. I just hang out and then I go out at night. I fly home and come back 1 week later with a friend of mine, and I buy an SUV, and me and him travel the whole of America, like 12,000 miles, 32 states, everything a tourist would want to see. I'm drunk every single day, every single town, every county and every state, 32 states. And by the time we come back to Santa Barbara, I've got 7 outstanding warrants in 5 different states. I don't know what that means. That means I had a good time, right? I'm illegal at this point as well. I don't know what that means. No caravan, just me. And then, you know. So, you know, what am I going to do? I've no income, no money. All the tech stocks I've invested in, we're going to crash overnight. I don't know what to do. My cousin comes up with this ingenious idea. He owns the English bar in downtown Santa Barbara. He said, you should become a bartender. I said, all right. That was the interview. That was it. All right. Show me how to pour a pint. Shows me how to pour a shot of Jaeger. This is a drinking man's pub. It's a dive bar. That's all you need to be able to serve. So I am starting to now, like, I'm dying of alcoholism at this point. Like, I'm so jittery and nervous. Like, I didn't know that was alcoholism. I thought, have I got a nervous disorder? Have I got a mental health issue? Am I depressed? I didn't know that was the spiritual malady creeping into my bones and blackening my soul. And I feel different to you. And you can never imagine telling anybody, right? How are you going to tell anybody that? You just have to hide that thing away and go, yeah, everything's good. As long as you think I'm okay, that's all I care about. Right? So, you know, I'm so bad that by the time I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, I can only think of two things. I'm either thinking about me, or I'm thinking about what you're thinking about me. That's it. That's all I can manage. So I'm bartending, I'm a nervous wreck, and I'm always in trouble. I'm drinking too much. I overshoot the mark. You know, the boss is having a word with me. The boss had a 2 year, for 2 years, I've become this drunk bartender, hanging on by a thread. By a thread, where it used to take me one full day to recover from a good session of, say, a weekend of drinking. I used to wake up after a weekend of heavy drinking and you just rule that day out. Especially not dealing with any humans or shit, right? Rule all that out, stay in my room, stay away from everybody. Maybe the next day I wake up and go, oh my God, that was weird, thank God for that. And that was up. It was taking 2 or 3 days to do that. So I could never catch a break. I remember thinking, I've got to get out of this fast lane, man. I'm either got to go to work, so how do I go to work and manage and have a little drink? Or it's my day off, so thank God I can go out and drink. Now, I know what's coming tomorrow, but the immense relief I'm going to have from just going out that day wins every time. So a typical day for me, bartending now, was I would wake up in the morning, sweating and stinking, and it's like 9 a.m., the bed's a mess, and in my room, it's like, it's just the worst thing you've seen in your life, and I'm already piecing it together like, God, was I working last night? Oh my God, I've got a shadowy recollection of me being slumped on one of the bar stools watching the locals serving each other. I'm thinking, this is not good. I'm the bartender, and they're passing each other money, they're paying for it. They're very nice, you know, they're paying for each other, putting in the till, and I'm just like, and I'd come to, and it's 3 a.m. We close at 1:30. The door's open, and I'm on the floor, like, what the fuck? Oh, shit. Yeah. You know, so I would wake up in the morning, and I'm in a panic, and I'm trying to figure it out, and I'm so nervous, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, just please don't be a Wednesday, because I go to the bar on Wednesday. Don't be a Wednesday. Oh, my God, it's Wednesday, and it's 9 a.m., and I got to be at the bar at 10 o'clock. And I've taken the last 18 Wednesdays off. I gotta go to work. I'm hanging on by a thread. So I'll jump in the shower and I'll try and look all right. And I'll jump on my bike. I don't want another DUI, right, Chris? And I'm bombing it down State Street. And as I'm going down State Street to work, I've got a plan, right? The plan is now I'm gonna go to the Irish pub to have a cheeky little drink to feel all right, to go to the English bar and go to work, right? But I'm so out of my mind as I'm bombing it down State Street and the delivery trucks are coming fast up this way on State. I'm almost, oh, I don't want to just drive in front of it and kill myself. And it's all over, right? I've thought of that many times and I almost do it and I don't do it. And oh my God, and I make it 10 minutes down and I get to Dargan's Irish pub. And I've done this every time and it's the same old scene. And I put my bike outside and I got to look good because Yvonne's in there and I can't make this look weird. It's 9:40. God, it looks weird having a drink. And fuck, I'm just going to go and kill myself instead. No. Just go in. So I walk in there. I walk in. Change my mind 15 times. I walk in and there's Yvonne. Lovely Irish Yvonne, like usual. Cleaning the pumps or some shit. I never clean a fucking thing in my pub. She's cleaning the pumps. And I walk in and all I'm trying to do is look cool. I'm dying of untreated alcoholism. I'm about to have a nervous mental breakdown any second. So I'm walking in 15 feet to the bar. I've changed my mind 6 times already. Just run out and kill yourself. No, don't. Run out and kill yourself. I go to the bar and I say, hey, Yvonne, how are you doing? Hey, Jesus, Darren, how are you doing, young man? I say, I'm all right, but I feel a bit rough. Like, I went out last night and I shouldn't have done, and I think I've got flu or something, you know, and I'm just... And I got to go to work and, you know, I'm just... And she said, would you like a pint? I'm all, fuck yes, I'd like a pint. And, like, you know, now it's almost her idea. You know, so I'm like, you know, weirdo. Yeah, go on, I'll have a pint. And I'm thinking, well, hurry up. And she turns around and takes her sweet ass time, goes to 3 feet to get the... And she's pouring it. And I'm like, I'm just going to run out. I'm just going to run out and jump into that truck. Okay, and she'd look around and I'd go, oh my God, hurry up. And she pours a drink and she comes back and she puts it right in front of me and stands there right looking at me right in the eye because she wants to, like, you know, fucking chit chat or some shit. I just want to, like, pull my knife out and stab her in the neck. And she did fucking get me pie. Oh, I put my drink down. It just hasn't quite done the trick. And I'm still, like, losing my mind, and I got to go to work, and the voices, and oh, I said, oh, Yvonne, I'm going to go, but I still feel weird. She said, would you like a Jaeger? I said, fuck yes, I'd like a Jaeger, like, right now. And she pours me the biggest bartending Jaeger you've seen in your life. And I take that big old thing, and I glug that thing down. Oh, man, what's the problem? I got from a trembling, nervous, despairing wreck to a man brimming over with self-reliance within 30 seconds. Now I'm going to go to work. Now I'm going to go to work and I'm going to come back and shag Yvonne on my break. No problem. I go to work, everything's cool. I overshoot the mark. I wake up the next morning, I'm in trouble. I get the phone call, get down here now. Oh, ooh, my God, that was coming. 2 years. I go down to the bar, I get fired. Darren, I don't know what's wrong with you. There's something seriously wrong with you, man. I should have fired you 2 years ago. Yes, I know, yeah. You got to go back to England. You got to go to rehab. You got to do something because there's something not right with you. I said, I know, yeah. I said, so get out of here. I love you, but get out of here. It killed me. That was worse than losing my entrepreneurial position in England. I'd been completely and utterly found out, and I knew it. And I knew I had a problem. I knew things were bad. I didn't know what to do. And what happened then is just my world just became super small at that point. I went back to that bar to see which bastard had took my shift and threw a drink over him or something. So I got 86 from my pub. And then within 2 weeks, I got 86 from every bar in Santa Barbara. James Joyce, Old Kings Road, O'Malley's. The Sportsman's really difficult to get barred from. I got barred from the Sportsman. The San Andres Fault. All these bars. And, you know, I am unemployable. I am not a functioning alcoholic. You know, I'm living in a crappy house on the west side of town, and my room is attached to the back of the house with its own entrance. Nobody knows what to do with me. My housemates want nothing to do with me. So I'd come in and go around the house and go into my bedroom. I got my own bathroom. So I'm just cut off from everybody. I can't pay rent. My rent was really cheap. We had a great deal. I couldn't pay the rent. I'm supposed to do the gardening or the dishes and everything. I can't even do that. I'm just a nightmare. I'm going to get evicted from there. And I'm just hanging on by a thread. You know, I'm just living now to kind of drink. I'm just drinking straight vodka. I'm stealing it from the liquor store. And I'm you know, I've had a gun in my mouth at this point. It feels heavy in my mouth. And do I blow the back out? Do I shoot through the roof of my mouth? I remember I busted into my roommate's bedroom. He was a maniac with all these guns, and I got the gun, and it feels good. And I heard a noise in the other bedroom, and I thought to myself, don't do it now, because you'll wake him up. You know, all that fucking possible. So I didn't. I'm very polite, you know what I mean? And, you know, another time I kicked in his door, and he'd hidden all his guns, because apparently he was living with a maniac. So he'd hidden all the guns, thinking I could find enough bullets to kill all you bastards. I just couldn't find the gun to kill me, you know? And I'm just having a nightmare. And a typical day for me would be, I'd come to, and it's pitch black outside. I have no idea whether it's night or day. And I'd figure it out, and it's 5 o'clock in the morning. And what's ahead of me is the longest, most miserable day of my life. And I'd wait for as long as is humanly possible before reaching under my bed, because I had the vodka under there. Horrible, strong, warm vodka, because I'd need it as soon as I wake up. And I'd tough it out for about 10 minutes, and I'm about to lose my mind. I'm hearing voices, I'm hearing my name, I'm chit-chatting with the voices at the end of the bed. You know, we told you you'd lose that bar job. I'm like, I knew that. How do you know that? Like, I'm interacting with them. Darren, what? Under the bed. I'm losing my mind, man. And I'd reach under the bed, get that vodka. It was like a science project. Big bottles of vodka, there's about that much left in it every morning. So I'd start chugging on that and get it down me, not to become Superman, just to not kill myself that moment. And then I would go to the store, and it'd be 6 a.m., and I'd wear the appropriate clothing, my baggy clothing, because I'm going to go and steal 2 or 3 big bottles of vodka. And one time I was going to the store, and I remember, it's only a block away. Now, if I don't get arrested or collapse within that block, it's going to be an okay day. And I'm walking, and there's a big shop front window, and I'm shuffling along to it, and I catch my reflection, and I'm like, oh my God, like, my hair's just everywhere. I've got the big bushy beard, I'm really thin and gone, I'm yellow, super thin, and I'm like, oh my God, I better not tell anybody about that. I've become this bum drunk. And I'd go to the store, I'd steal me 3 big bottles of vodka, and I'd clink off back home, and then I'd start drinking. Now, I can't just get drunk and pass out. It's like a science project. I got to drink enough just to maintain, just to stay drunk throughout the day, to maybe make it to the evening, to maybe get to 11 o'clock or midnight, to maybe catch a good enough sleep to maybe wake up and not have to drink like that again. And it says, the mind and body are marvelous mechanisms. I drank like that for 2 more years. 2 more years of 2 to 3 big bottles of vodka a day. And jails, institutions, and death, you know. And that was the final year. I'd started going to AA. I've been in the lockdown psychiatric unit, you know, several times, 4 times in 1 year. And, you know, what am I going to do? People in AA were luckily talking about the solution, but I was just already drunk before I got here, and I just didn't know what was going on. But thankfully, I was being given the message, you know, so I knew that some people were staying sober, and I had a dirty little secret in AA that I wasn't working the steps, and I didn't have a sponsor. And some guy had cornered me one time, because I was sharing how I'm miserable, I'm going to kill myself, and this doesn't work. And he called me to one side and said, hey, you little wanker. You can't say you gave AA a good go. I'm all, screw you, old man. What are you talking about? I've been coming here for a year. He said, well, first of all, why don't you come sober? It works better. I'm like, ooh, okay. You know, because every time I went to the lockdown psychiatric unit, they popped me out sober. Every time I went to jail, I came out sober. So even I can get sober, I just can't stay sober. And he said, a drunk like you, you need to go through the book with someone who knows what they're doing. And you need to go through those 12 steps. And I'm all, screw you, and he's all, screw you, and I left. And this one morning, I woke up in the morning, and there was no vodka under my bed. And I thought that was a sign to kill myself. So I'm pretty calm, and I stay in my room for 2 or 3 hours just deliberating how to do it. You know, I know it's going to kill my mum. That's what stopped me doing it the last time. And I end up jumping in my car and driving up to Cold Springs Bridge. Right? Popular suicide spot. There was no suicide rails at this point. So I drive all the way up there, and by this time it's about 11 a.m. and I park the car and I stand in the middle of the bridge. And that guy, I remembered that conversation. And I thought, fuck, I've never done this stupid shit, and he's right, and it's gonna kill me, mum. So I almost made a third step decision at that point, and I said to myself, but I meant it, I said, all right, I'm gonna go that stupid 12-step bullshit. I'm gonna do those stupid 12 steps. And when they don't work, I'm gonna go and find that man. We're gonna have a little chit chat. I'll probably take him off the bridge with me, right? So I get back. Now I can't come skipping into AA going, where's those golden 12 steps? You know, I'm like, I need to be medically detoxed. So I get in my car, I drive back down the pass, I drive all the way back down to the emergency room and park in my usual spot. And just as I'm pulling in, I hit the car next to me, sideswipe it. Oh my God. The security there, they come around, the police are already there, it's the emergency room. And they come over, and I'm sober as a judge, I'm all right. And I said, I'm sorry, that was my fault. I got my ID, I got some health problems, I need to go into the hospital. And the two cops are there, and one of them says to me, have you been drinking? I said, no, have you? You don't like that, don't try that at home. He says, I smell alcohol. I said, no, I've not been drinking. He said, we're going to have to do some field sobriety tests. And his partner behind him, he's like watching me. He's like rooting for me kind of thing. And this guy's just being an asshole doing his job. And I do all the field sobriety tests perfectly. Perfectly. He's pissed off, this guy. And he said, I smell alcohol. I said, well, I haven't had a drink, sir. And he said, well, let's do some more. So I do some more, do more perfectly. He said, you got to blow into this thing. You reek of alcohol. And I blow into his machine and I blow a 0.32. And he cannot believe it. His mate cannot believe it. And they don't, you know, and I'm like, what, yeah. And he starts to get the handcuffs out. And I start to panic for the first time and say, hey, whoa, what are you doing? He said, well, turn around, we're going to handcuff you. I said, hey, hang on a minute. If you take me to jail right now, I will kill somebody. I said, I'm small, but I'm fucking dangerous, mate. I'm telling you now. Like, and it, for some reason, they do arrest me, but they don't take me to jail. And I start to use our language. I start to say, look, sir, I'm an alcoholic. I'm pretty sure of that, but I've never done AA to the best of my ability. I actually need to go to 5 East, the lockdown psychiatric unit. They got a file on me in there. I've been in there 4 times this year. It's not another good thing not to try. You know, so he says, we've got to take you, we've got to arrest you, man. But he tells me he's going to take me to the police station. And I get such a sense of relief from that. I'm like, all right, man, thank you. And now we're getting on like a house on fire. Now we're all good. And they put me in the back of the squad car and we're having a good time. And they radio ahead to the police station. They go, oh, we've got this Irishman in the back. I said, I'm English, you moron. They take me to the police station. They take blood and the count goes even higher. They leave me there for like 4, 5, 6 hours or something. And then somebody they know and trust comes and picks me up, takes me all the way back to the lockdown psychiatric unit. Right, but so what? 4 times. I got drunk 2 times on the way home from there. So I go, and I don't mind the psych. It sounds awful, doesn't it? And I suppose it is. One flew over the cuckoo's nest for sure. But I'm used to that, you know, and I like it because relief is coming. They're going to dope the shit out of me, you know. They're going to give me some good stuff. So I go in there, they admit me, they know me in there, they give me a Valium straight away. I said, no, I'm Darren Phillips, I need 3 Valiums, like, right now. So they give me 3 Valiums and, you know, I'm their best friend, I'm popping up at the hatch. Can I have a Valium? You know, the Valium, you know, I get loaded out of my mind. Because, as soon as I get that relief, and I can immediately start judging people again, right? I'm in there because I wanted to kill myself, or I want to kill you. Now I'm loaded to the gills and I can judge people. And I go into the day room and see all the weirdos, right? Who's the other weirdos in here? And there's a girl doing laps around the couch. I'm like, oh, I'll probably shag her later, I don't know. There's another guy who's rocking in his chair, and I'm like, look at this guy, we'll take him to the pub, I'm sure he's got money, you know. I'm just out of my mind. And what they'll do then is they'll detox me from the alcohol with the drugs, and they'll detox me from the drugs, and then 8 or 9 days later, they'll pop me out the other side, sober. The only difference is this time, it was a Wednesday, and I somehow stayed sober that afternoon, and I went to the Junkyard Dogs, my home group. Whoa. Oh my God. Now, those guys are serious. And I said to this guy, I said, look, Mike, I'm going to drink tonight. You know it. I know it. What do I need to do? I'd never done that before. It's called hitting bottom. None of the other outside bullshit, 5E's prison, this, that. Tell me what to do. Asking for help is when you've hit bottom and following through with that help. And he said, let's do a third step prayer. I said, what? Outside this meeting with 80 other tough looking guys? He said, yeah. I said, okay. The no had been beaten out of me. So we did a third step prayer. We went into the meeting, and the meeting was a good meeting. Some guy behind me actually had a grand mal seizure, an alcoholic seizure, and he locked up. It took him 2 minutes to lock up, and everyone just stopped the meeting, and we're all looking at him. You know, someone called the 911. He had this, it was the most awful, ugly thing I've ever seen in my life, and then he fell off his chair. And then, you know, now I've had many of them seizures. I've just never seen one. I was like, holy shit, that's kind of ugly. You know, the ambulance took him away, and we carried on with our meeting. You know, let's get on with the meeting. That was almost a distraction. You know, we're dying of alcohol. Let's get into action. Let's do the meeting. We have the meeting. He tells me to go home and start my fourth step. And what he says, that third step means nothing. So I went home and wrote 100 names. I got up the next morning at 5 a.m., shaking and baking. I went to the beach and wrote 100 more. And I called him at 6 a.m. and he answered the phone because he knew. And he gave me direction throughout that day, 12 different phone calls to finish all 3 inventories. I got up the next day and I shared it with him. And he gave me a big hug and said, Darren, this is amazing. I said, I'm glad you're feeling good because I feel like shit. He said, don't worry, man, trust in the process. And then we did 6 and 7. And then I copied my list over and I added to it. On my fourth day of sobriety, I went out around Santa Barbara and made 21 amends. And I was literally rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence. I wish I had a cooler thing to say, but I don't. My heart filled up. And I couldn't believe what was going on. I got up the next day and did 12 more. I went to the liquor store one block away from my house and I said, I need to speak to the manager. I said, I'm a bad drunk, mate. And I've been stealing a lot of vodka from you. It was cheap vodka, but it was a lot of vodka. I said, I've erred on the side of caution for you when it comes to $2,750. I'm living my life a completely different way today. I'll never steal from you or anyone else ever again. I've just started work, it's Friday, here's $25. I'll be back every Friday with $25 till I've paid that whole thing off and any interest you determine. Is there anything else I could do to make this right? And he said, wow. And I went, wow. And I floated off and made a couple more amends. I was in. I said to my sponsor, what's next? He said, 10 and 11. I'll show you what to do in the morning and what to do at night. Prayer and meditation, if you want the guaranteed version, right? Now it's taken me many years to go from 2 minutes of meditation to 10 or 12 minutes of meditation, but God loves a trier. So start your journey. 5 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the morning, 2 minutes at night, how to review your day. And I went back to my home group of recovered member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm running around like a madman. And I got into action right away, and I wanted to give this thing away right away, and I did. I didn't know what I was doing. None of us do, but my sponsor helped me. I wanted people to feel like I felt. And I remember running up to people in AA going, oh my God, mate, you're 18 months sober. Now I understand what you're talking about. He's like, yeah, man, it's cool, isn't it? Yeah. And then I go to this other miserable guy who's 5 years sober, like the steps. And he's like, what are you talking about? You know, not everybody in AA is going to do the steps. Yeah, it's not none of my business. But I learned that early on. But I was doing H&I before I knew what H&I was. You know, I sponsored a guy, I'm a month or 6 weeks sober, and this guy stayed sober 4 years, I couldn't believe it. And then I thought, oh, I'm doing a good job. Now I know different, but it really, really empowered me. You know, and I'm the kind of alcoholic, I have to stay in action. I have to work a very good program just to be normal. Just to be normal. Like, I sponsor a lot of guys, I do a lot of H&I, I go to the prisons, the jail. I think I should be the Dalai Lama or some shit, right? I do all that just to be normal. Just so my colleagues on campus can say, do you know that guy Darren? Oh, the English guy. Yeah, he's all right, him, innit? Yeah, he's all right. Just to get that. I got to chop wood and carry water. You know, and if I don't, if I take my foot off the gas, I need attention. You need to make me feel special just for me to, you know, feel normal. You have to treat me special so I can feel normal about myself, or I want a round of applause for everything, me. You know, if I want my wife to think good of me all the time, so I'll go home before she gets home, and I'll get the Hoover out sometimes. I'm not even doing the Hoovering sometimes, just get the Hoover out, maybe I'll give a quick run around, put it in the middle of the room, boom. Because I can hear her coming. That's Angela. Quick, Bex, get me little dog Bex. Bex in the bedroom. So I'll go in the bedroom and lie down. So she can come in and be astounded that I did that. And she'll come in, I'm like a little kid. She'll come into the bedroom and go, did you do the Hoovering? I'll be like, yeah, that was me. You know, what a fucking round of applause for that shit. I'm crazy if I don't stay into action. I'm like an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I'm all over the place unless I'm into action and I stay like that. I was lucky enough to speak at a convention a few years ago in the Bay Area, and this is how God works in my life. I am not a religious guy. God speaks to me mostly through you lot. And I'm at this convention, 3,000 youngsters, crazy maniac weekend. Most of them have left. I'm doing the closeout talk. And I'm on stage with this other girl. She's going to do 10 minutes. And she's fiddling on her phone, and it's driving me mad. Like, that doesn't look good. Stop doing it. What's wrong? Hundreds of people are waiting for us. And she says, my sponsor in LA is having a big problem. She's speaking to someone in Hawaii, and she needs help. And she says to me, do you know anybody from Santa Barbara? And I said, actually, I'm from Santa Barbara. Give them my number and put your phone away, kind of thing. So we do our talk. Everything goes great. We're back in the car. We're flying down the freeway. Me and three other tough guys who I sponsor, all tattooed up and shit, prisoners. And so as we're flying down, we're having a good time, and I call this guy. He's in Maui, Hawaii. So this girl had got sober with this guy 21 years ago, and he moved a few weeks sober to Maui and stayed sober. So I call this guy who I don't know, and he answers the phone. And I said, hey, my name's Darren. I was giving you a number. I was giving you a call back. And he starts crying his eyes out, just bawling his eyes out. And it's killing me, and I'm about to cry. But I'm not going to cry with these tough guys. And look over, and he's fucking crying. I'm like, oh, God. So I can cry. And we're just listening to him. I said, listen, man, don't worry, man. Just, we understand. And he said, look, I got sober a long time ago. And I moved away, and I've stayed sober. I've never asked for anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's small meetings over here, and I'm doing great. I've never asked for anything, but I've always said, if my boys ever need the hand of AA, I hope it's going to be there. I've got a 19-year-old and a 21-year-old, and they're both dying of alcoholism. I said, I'll help in any way I can. He said, well, they both attend Santa Barbara City College. I said, I work at Santa Barbara City College. He's like, we have entered the world of the spirit. Oh, my God. I've got hundreds of those stories. And I go back to Santa Barbara and I connect with those two guys. One of them's doing really good and one of them's dying of alcoholism. The yin and the yang of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. How lucky are we that we're here and we're sober? How lucky are many of us that our hearts are filled with joy and laughter? It is unbelievable. The God thing kept me out of here a long time. I'd leave the Alana Club if you mentioned God. But I heard this, I heard that religion might be for those people that are trying to avoid going to hell. But spirituality is for people that have been to hell. And I identify with that. Thank you.
Let's give Darren a